Russ Kramer, and I'm actually a diversified family farmer from Osage County, Missouri, which is in the central part of the state, just kind of south of the Missouri River. And I'm a fifth generation farmer on that farm, and so I'm here to stay, I guess you might say. So my passion on that farm has been pigs, and I started raising pigs. I had responsibilities for part of the pig operation since I was five, and so I've been doing this a long time. Along the way, I guess I learned about how pigs and pig farming could be instrumental in sustaining a local rural economy. Got involved heavily in the farm advocacy throughout my years, including I'm a past president of the Missouri Pork Producers Association and past president of the Farmers Union, and have had various activities throughout the way. I guess there's a couple of things that life events that changed my philosophy and the way that I've done things in pork production and marketing. And one was an incident that occurred in the late 80s when I actually contracted a antibiotic resistant form of strep that was actually traced to my pigs, and actually traced it back to the way that I was feeding my hogs at that time, feeding a low level of antibiotics, primarily penicillin and sulfate and oleomycin to my pigs. That was just kind of a standard procedure for a lot of farmers back then, and we were growing hogs that are pretty intensive. An intensive system, and I nearly died from that disease. I actually had to prove to my doctors, or show my doctors, that the serology reports of my pigs, that there was only one out of 10 antibiotics that was actually sensitive to this pathogen, and actually saved my own life. That changed my way of thinking, the way that I produced my hogs. I basically went to a natural type system with more space, more biosecurity, cleaner hogs, genetics that were that had a better immunity system and that were more robust, and the feed system with no antibiotics, using more of the nutraceuticals and things like that. And that was, of course, back in the days when there really wasn't a Whole Foods or a Chipotle or whatever. I just did it because I felt it was the right thing to do, and it was very sustainable. I vowed to teach farmers and basically evangelize that there wasn't an alternative way to raise pigs without the illegal use of antibiotics. The second occurrence was in 1998, with the fallout of the hog prices, when I was president of the Missouri Pork Producers, when I got involved in those activities, there were as many as 40,000 hog farmers in Missouri, and I saw the centralization, the consolidation of the pork industry before my eyes during those years from the 80s on. And with that culmination of low hog prices and having very few opportunities or choices to market pigs. And so, many of us farmers in my county were receiving as low as 7 cents per pound for our live weight market hogs. And, it basically ran 75% of those producers out of business. And so being very community-minded and knowing other producers that had the same passion that I had for raising pigs in a more independent fashion, that took me to Europe, where I studied basically an alternative marketing system. What I learned was this whole concept of relationships between relationship marketing, as I'd call it, relationships between consumers and farmers, and consumers who actually were paying a premium price and basically using their consumer dollars to keep family farms on their farms, wanting to know who produced the food, where it was produced and how it was produced. And I was very impressed. That was in 1999. And I saw that in England, went into to Germany as well to study the co-op system and study a system where farmers had united with butcher shops and producing pork that was raised entirely without antibiotics. And then I also went into the Parma region of Italy to learn about value-added pork production, particularly the prosciutto hand-making business and community-based businesses. Took those ideas back home and started a cooperative and a network of farmers on the pork side who were willing to produce hogs the way that many consumers, that growing consumer market in the United States, demanded more of the early hogs raised without antibiotics, raised without crates, and built a system called Heritage Foods that's still today very, very successful and has basically supported about 120 farm families that otherwise wouldn't be in the farming business today. With that system along the way, and this is kind of pertinent to where we're at today, is that, in the region that I'm involved with Palindromes, Palindromes is a holding company that's designed to be a facilitator for community-based businesses and family farmers to basically turn the pricing system into a system where farmers and local processors become price makers rather than price takers. I built a system that united farmers with consumers that were willing to pay the price that farmers needed to make a living, just like a regular business person. And on the farmer side, we were able to pay farmers based on their cost production plus a fair return on investment that was more like, like a business aspired to achieve in that, 10 to 20% return on investment. And we did that, very successfully. To this day, it's one of the most successful programs in the country. 6 years ago, we committed to going to an all non-GMO diet for our pigs. We became the most prominent non-GMO Project Verified source of pork throughout the country, and farmers are making money on every single hog, or have the opportunity anyway, and the business is thriving as well. And so that's basically my background with Palindromes. I serve as the chairman of the advisory board, and Palindromes has emerged as a significant player that's becoming the price corrector. And by that is that, rather than, use the CME or the Board of Trade as the Bible for pricing, Palindromes basically facilitates the whole value chain, starting at the market. They have perhaps the best international marketing relationships there are. And then putting together a pricing system throughout the value chain that's equitable to all participating partners. And to give you an example, on the pork side, we also work with soybean farmers and soybean seed companies that have very unique non-GMO traits that not only are yielding as good as the genetically modified traits, but also have certain nutritional attributes that not only are heart healthy for people, but are very good for the health of the hog as well as the meat quality, and the farmers receive a premium there as well. So we design systems that are extremely sustainable, that are profitable, that don't necessarily require government assistance to survive, and we've done pilot projects and done it on smaller scales, but it's something that is certainly being looked at to multiply throughout this country.
Russ, a lot of different directions we could go, but I wanted to ask you a little bit about the threat of African swine fever, which is spreading throughout China. The pork sector in the U.S., very concerned about that. Feed ingredients come from China, and it's been shown that those ingredients can be contaminated, meaning that the virus could enter the U.S. in that fashion. So talk about the threat that you see and ways in which producers can protect themselves. You touched on biosecurity a little bit ago, and I'm sure that is a big part of the effort of protection. But how do you approach the threat of African swine fever?
Well, just like we've treated the threat of PEDV and PERS within our system. It should be viewed as a threat to our pork supply and to both producers and consumers. It's something that we've recognized for a long time that it could be a threat, and so now it's knocking on our doors. And so, you know, we need to step up our efforts in biosecurity. I know that there is a vaccine that's being looked at and perhaps it's going to be approved. And you know, I can't comment too much on how effective it might be, but it's certainly something we need to look at as far as a tool in the toolbox. As far as feedstuffs coming into the country, you know, that is a huge threat because we do, unfortunately, we rely on micro ingredients and even macro ingredients coming in from various parts of the world. And you know, we must be very careful about that. You know, what we've done in our systems is and we'll sound the alarm again, and that is, you know, we feel there's a need to decentralize, you know, that, you know, our pork industry at least moderate it some. In other words, we've relied on, you know, we put our production, you know, in poultry, we've done it as well in certain areas where it's highly concentrated into larger operations centered around a very large packing plant. And you know, I'm not here to burn anybody's house down or talk about it, but I think we have to look at alternative systems where it's less centralized. In other words, biosecurity in our pig operations with our more smaller to moderate sized producers and using more community based plants, you know, we've proven, for instance, during the PEDV outbreak that we had zero cases within our populations in our system, and I think it had, you know, a lot to do with being a less concentrated system. We're not affected by PERS as much as some of the other systems. And so I think that's something we need to look at. The other thing that we do is, you know, that I can throw out as a strong suggestion is that we advocate and strongly encourage our producers to shop within their community. And that is including feed ingredients. They make alliances with their neighbors, for instance, grain farmers that grow crops. We do have a provision where we don't allow mammalian-based products in our feedstuffs. And yes, it increases the cost somewhat, but it also is a biosecure measure that you don't have to rely on sourcing some products from overseas that may contain some animal protein or animal products, and we have some transparency of where that is. And then we don't have to rely on transportation to transport the feed ingredient throughout the world to certain locations, nor do we have to rely on huge amounts of transportation and biosecurity risk when we transport our hogs out of the system. And so, and one other thing, I guess I can say that, you know, not only is it biosecurity, but it's also biodiversity. Our system of pig production is one that's, you know, it's definitely not the norm according to standards today in the pork industry. As far as genetics, for instance, we need a lot from some older lines. I call them older lines, maybe heirloom lines, but older lines of swine that have more disease resistance. That cross, in other words, you take a line of Tamworth, for instance, that I use a lot in these crossing with some lines, or those are one of the ranges, and you get this heterosis explosion that not only do the hogs perform and do they strive and survive, but they're also disease resistant. And so we incorporate a variety of lines that have been selected for those type of traits, as well as traits that are, you know, less stress, in other words, you know, easier moving, more robust kind of animals. And I think that's a big thing that we need to look at as well. So biosecurity, biodiversity, being more community-based, you know, moderating the centralization and the concentration, I think those are all things that I think this country needs to address immediately.
Russ, let's talk about antibiotic resistance. And you mentioned that you had traveled to Europe, and it sounded like an eye-opening experience, and the way that they've moved away from the use of antibiotics and some of the protocols and guidelines that are now in place in the U.S. I've talked to people like Liz Wagstrom at NPPC, who says to completely remove antibiotics would be inhumane. And so I'm wondering about the balance that you have struck as far as making sure animals are healthy, and I believe you are completely antibiotic free on your farm. So how you're able to do that and ensure that the animals are healthy, and again, just the process there, I would think that it's pretty delicate.
Sure, I appreciate that. First of all, I want to make it clear that I may be perhaps the most pro antibiotic person in this country. In other words, they saved my life, and I believe in is preserving the efficacy of those and the usefulness. But I do know, and I have seen this not only in the pork industry, but other livestock and poultry industries where the overuse of them and being used strictly as a growth promoting has created superbugs or antibiotic-resistant bacteria. It's definitely been a problem. And as I've traveled Europe, and of course, you know, I've had experience doing this since 1989. And I will tell you that, you know, my protocols are is that, you know, because of the feed and the breed of hogs and the way that we produce them, that it's actually an easier system in a way, because you don't have to, you know, I don't vaccinate nor treat with therapeutic, you know, antibiotics. But if I had to, we have resorted and found many alternatives, such as probiotics, enzymes, and herbs, and even more and more people are using seaweed, that the effectiveness seems to be just as well. In some cases have actually exceeded antibiotics. I agree with Liz. I don't think we, as far as you don't want to eliminate antibiotics, because you know last resort, we do need to treat them. It is a humane issue. I encourage all my farmers, if they have to treat therapeutically, we do identify that animal and it goes into a different system. And so we do not advocate not treating. We do advocate, but we have educated our farmers where they can raise hogs without the routine use, and we've done a very, very good job of doing that. And so you'll find that that these hogs that are that way become more, their immune system becomes greater, that the need basically goes away. I've taught many a farmer, both large and small, how to do this, both through production practices and preventative practices. And I know that a reliance on antibiotics, you know, can be diminished quite a lot. And, you know, even now the industry has stepped forward. Many antibiotic companies, pharmaceutical companies have stepped in, have developed many very good alternatives on the nutraceutical side. So I'm pretty proud of that.
Is there anything else, though, that we haven't talked about yet that you want to make sure we do?
No, I guess the only other thing that I would mention is that on the marketing side, I mean, the number one thing I think that we do the best is we listen to consumers and we listen to them throughout the world, and that's what, you know, oftentimes farmers basically think that it's farmers against consumers, and I think it's a dialogue that goes both ways. And I think we've got to continue to listen to them and respond to their needs, and I think the high quality food, and I think on the other end, the consumer is being willing to pay for it.